outside the boundaries of the traditional art world, the commercial art world, the big dealers. The other reason that you've had so much difficulty is not as much because of your content as it is the fact that it's very hard for existing culture to accept that a woman could occupy your position. Why do you think that the resistance to your work continues?
I think I'd like to comment first on what you said. I'm not convinced that the content of my work is not relevant to the resistance. Your comments suggested that it wasn't so much the content, somehow my power or position as a woman, which I would agree with that, inasmuch as I think that there's a profound double standard, like all of the kind of comments about me being difficult, I think really reflect the kind of double standard in the culture, because one never hears articles about male artists being difficult in their personalities and stuff like that. And God knows they're very difficult and certainly much more authoritarian than me. Like, I've heard many stories about the perversities of Klaus Oldenburg, private stories, you know, and how he just sort of often enjoys playing with people, and that I know people who have worked with male artists. Some of the people who worked with me worked with male artists before as their assistants and talked about how authoritarian they were, how demanding, how difficult. But that never comes up in a discussion about them. And I must say that women are guilty of that also. Women are guilty of expecting from other women that apart from being operating at a high level creatively, we're also supposed to be nice. And so I think that there's a real double standard involved in what a woman is allowed to be that operates with me, so that people have difficulty confronting a highly creative person in a female body. I think there's a lot of confusion that comes out of that, therefore misinterpretation. I think the issue of women remaking the world in our own image and likeness is a relatively new phenomena, and it is difficult and threatening for people to have their grasp on reality challenged. And of course, if we as women begin to put out images that present the world as we see it, and that those images are different from men's images, that means we are implicitly challenging the dominant reality view of the culture, and that's threatening. There's also the fact that simply new images are always threatening. There's resistance. I mean, it's right firmly in the history of art. It's not like this has never happened before. You know, they threw eggs at the Dadaists and they, you know, pelted the Impressionists. I mean, it's not like this has never happened before. It's just that it's never happened to women. And also, we are so geared psychologically towards wanting love and acceptance that the level of confrontation with society that is a result of challenging society's values is quite overpowering. It was to me, and it certainly is to all of us, I think. But one has to expect, one has to look at my experience as a guide to what one can expect if a woman wants to really seriously operate in the world and make images that count. Then I think she has to be prepared to realize what she's going to face and not be defeated by it, because we have been defeated by it in the past. I mean, that is one of the reasons we have so many instances of creative women stopping work, putting their heads in the oven, you know, committing suicide, tragically ending their lives. It is, however, quite unfair that we should have to face what we face and live the kind of lack of, experience the kind of lack of reward. Well, I'd like to just talk a little bit about why I've gone out of the art world, but I did not sit down one day and put my head on my hand and say, aha, I'm going to go out of the art world. What happened instead was that I, as all young artists, wanted to participate in the art community. And it was when I began to encounter unbelievable resistance. First, straight out discrimination. Just straight out. You can't be a woman and an artist too. You know, all the things I chronicled in Through the Flower. Straight out resistance and discrimination. And gradually, as I evolved as an artist and felt that I had a right to a certain kind of support from the art community, a chance to make prints and a chance to extend myself and have a dealer and have all these things that, you know,
don't
a successful.
Ungrateful.
Don't be ungrateful. I am ungrateful. you know, I turned to, I slowly began to find other ways to operate as an artist so that I could survive in the absence of support. And it is true that by doing that, I have actually, I think, put myself in a position to actually make a real contribution to the position of the artist in society and to re-energize that and to make a model for how an artist can, in fact, relate to a wider community and how art can act in the world in a way that is much more significant to people's lives than that art that is caught up and contained within the elitist art structure. But it came out of my desire to survive as an artist at all costs and my resolution to find ways to act in the world so that I could keep making images.
I think the problem of the lack of a network and the lack of support has been more crippling to women than any other factor.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And in fact, there's no question that what I have been able to achieve now is totally because of the network that both I've contributed to building and that has been built. You know, so that the fact that I have a woman editor and I had a woman agent, and there are women now in network news and media who cover the work of women. And, you know, that network is, of course, growing. And essentially what I built in terms of my own studio was a support network. But, you know, there's still a tremendous amount of, I think, confusion about what my goals are. And I particularly in the East, I am basically not a careerist artist. In other words, I mean, I don't make decisions based on what's good for my career. I make decisions based on my goals. And my goals have to do with making images that affirm women and making those images accessible to a wide audience and finding ways to revive the meaning of art and the power of art and demonstrate that art can be more than wallpaper on a wall. And my goals come out of my deep belief in art and in images as a way to cross barriers and transcend boundaries, and that women have never been able to participate in the dialogue of imaging reality, and that requires an enormous sacrifice, an enormous personal sacrifice. And, I mean, that is what it has required of me. That, on the contrary, it's like even my relationship to media. You know, people think that I use the media and I'm interested in PR. I'm not interested in PR. PR is the least of, I mean, I find, in fact, a lot of the media coverage uncomfortable. I find being in the center of attention all the time uncomfortable. But one of the ways I was able to communicate to a larger audience was through the media. When the art media did not cover me and would not deal with my work, actually, other media did. And so I discovered that I could communicate through the media. And that became a very important way of reaching and building a larger audience, not only for my art, but by implication for other women's art, if that art speaks clearly and communicates values that are relevant to women. Like, you know, one of the things that was very influential on some of these decisions I made was, like, you know, when I began to study women's literature, and I realized that 100 years ago, there were many women writers who had struggled with a lot of the same issues we were all struggling with in the women's movement, and that seemed to me to be ridiculous. Why should we keep reinventing the wheel? Why should we keep struggling personally and privately with issues that had, in fact, been dealt with in novels and where there were paintings and images that could make a woman feel good and powerful and strong? And how to break those images and break that traditional, that set of both literary and visual images out of their encasement in a method of transmission that made them seem totally inaccessible. In other words, even when I was a college student and I read Jane Eyre, nobody ever mentioned that Jane Eyre was essentially about a woman trying to define where her basic loyalty should be, whether it was to herself or to a man or to society, and that she came down on the side of herself. Now, those are the kinds of discussions we should have had in college. We didn't have them in college because all of the work that we've done has been gets presented in history and in classes as if our content was not there. It's the best case in point is Virginia Woolf.
Yes.
You know, and we are only now beginning to really understand what she grappled with in her lifetime. Now, that realizing that and understanding how generation after generation after generation of women were being deprived of their rightful information and deprived of role models and deprived of information that could help them shape themselves in a new way was really very, very important in terms of my decision to begin to move out and to express this information in a way that was clear and could be understood. Well, the art media does not express information clearly. It mystifies it. You know, you read an art magazine, it makes you feel like you're dumb. The only media that actually, where you can actually speak clearly and simply and directly is the non-art media. And now sometimes they garble too, but at least they don't mystify language in the same way.
I would like to go back a little bit and talk about the relationship of your art and the implications of your art for the relationship of art in culture. The reason why I think your work is very important, one of the reasons I think your work is very important, is the fact that it redefines and marks a turning point in the relationship of art in culture, because art and culture are not identical. Neither is culture and society identical. That is to say that rather than create a body of work that is only of interest to the art world, which can roughly be defined now worldwide is about 5,000 people, you've sought to bring art into a more human relationship with other people and make art more participatory. And I think that alone in itself is of great import.
Well, the one thing I would say is that I've tried to do that, and I think this is very crucial, I've tried to do that without sacrificing the quality of art that we associate with the elitist art world, because
I think
it's extremely important. Again, it's complex. I think it's extremely important to not simply come up with this idea, which of course all radical groups are guilty of, and feminists are no exception. And I did it myself at the beginning. You know, oh yeah, well that's male. We don't want anything to do with it, and you know that's just elitist. It's much more complex than that, and I think that my struggle as an artist has been made more, I think, difficult, but more ultimately significant because I could not repudiate the values of art, the quality that is, in fact, is as sexist a painting as a Renoir. It may be a sexist and, as Mao would say, a flawed image, but the way the image is conveyed, the quality of its intensity, the beauty of its surface, are important to acknowledge.
I'm very glad that you have brought this up because I think that people have tended to overlook the underlying drive of your art, which is to create an art as great as that, say, of Rachel Roych, the great flower painter, or of not only the other great women in history, but also of other males as well. I mean, I think your ultimate ambition is art, with a capital A, if I may say so. But again, this is something that has not been emphasized in the presentation of you, either publicly or privately, and I'm very glad that you have made it clear that that is chief among your goals.
Well, you see, the last 10 years, I have been step by step trying to address these things. At first, in these years, I began to see the tremendous discrepancy between my form and what I really wanted to say, what I really had to say, and the fact that formal art language, as it existed, did not leave very much room for the expression of my own content. So my early work, there was in this decade, there was a tremendous split between, for example, openly female subject matter and my more transformed abstract work. So step by step, I tried to figure out how to get the content and the form together by changing, altering the form, developing a form that maintained its connection with my whole history as an artist, while simultaneously becoming truer to the content. Now, that took quite a long time. And actually, if you look at my work through the 70s, that's what you see is the slow evolution of a language, of delicacy and acuity, but that becomes more and more connected to the content that I was trying to address and deal with.
Right, I remember your early work, the Fresno fans, mm-hmm. and the plastics and all that.
You see, I was not willing to give up the beauty of those surfaces. I was not willing to give up that those wonderful fades. I mean, because that, just looking at them in and of themselves gives pleasure.
California high-tech is... Plastics.
Plastics, whatever, but it was the quality of the color and the fade and the surface that was, you know, I was attached to that. I mean, I think a work of art has to give beauty, has to give pleasure purely to the senses in and of itself, as if, you know, I think you have to be able to look at it and just, it's like hearing a piece of music, be overpowered by all those feelings of joy and terror and sadness and beauty that life contains. That doesn't mean I think that should be a separate experience. I think it has to be part of the art experience. That's all. That's what I require from a work of art. Anyway, but the two issues then become, who can have that experience? Who is that experience for? Is that experience only for a small percentage of the population? Why should it only be for a small percentage of the population? And what does that experience consist of? What set of values is conveyed through that experience? Whose reality, whose experience, life experience, is represented in that experience? Well, as we know, by and large, women's life experience has not been represented. It has been men's life experience that has made up the body of art history, at least as we know it now. And there are all these categories and words that diminish women's expression, so that if it's done by a man, it's high art. If it's done by a woman, it's decorative. If it's done by a man, it's art. If it's done by a woman, it's political. I mean, there's all these words, you know. For example, images by men of women are art. Images by women of men are political. Abstract patterns by men are art. Abstract patterns by women in fabric are decorative. They're called quilts. So there's all these kind of double standards and all these kind of words that prevent women's experience from entering, even when they express it, from entering the mainstream of art. So these are all important things. These are all things I had to deal with in terms of trying to make a credible art that did not deny women's experience and also allowed that experience to be transformed into a work of art that was credible as art. Now, what I've tried to do is build a language, an art language, that people who were not members of the elitist art world could understand without sacrificing the beauty of the object. And I've also tried to consider the idea of why there are so many artists all over the country who do not relate to their own communities, but rather all think about getting into New York, while all these people all over the country don't have access to images that affirm them, particularly women. So it's like rethinking, okay? It's like 250,000 people all looking at New York, all trying to get into Castelli Gallery, which only allows 15 people in, as opposed to 250,000 people all looking to their own communities and realizing that they can, in fact, find ways to make art that affirms the woman next door. I mean, why do they actually get into Leo Castelli? I mean, we've all been brainwashed as artists in terms of how we've thought. And when you're talking about my ideas about art and community and art and culture, it's not just making images that affirm women, but distributing them in a different way, making them available in a different way, which means redefining the relationship of artists to society altogether.
I think that what you do has in part been dealt with in the art world in the way that women's art has tended to be dealt with by the organized art world throughout history, which is to say that it's not art. And I've heard this charge leveled at you. And the other example I want to bring up, which is very uppermost in my mind now because of the lawsuit at Cornell, is the case of Jacqueline Livingston, whom you may not know, who does images of photographs of male nudes mm-hmm. in her family, which has caused a tremendous uproar. And the charge which has been leveled at her is that she is not making art. Okay, and that is how the art world has escaped and evaded dealing with your work, by saying that a woman did it And it's not art because it's subject matter that has to do with female content. Now, the other charge, the other part of that charge is, when a man does it, it's art, and when a woman does it, it's craft.
And actually, there hasn't been too many accusations about craft. It's not that it's craft, it's politics. I mean, that's what I was starting to talk about, which is those are all devices by which a dominant class retains its dominance. And it's very important to understand that. That is what it is. When there is a class that has control, they control value. So
they define value.
They define and control value. Absolutely.
It's
they
the
control
same thing.
Them. Absolutely. So that's what I was talking about. If when women paint images of men as politics, but when men paint images of women as art, that's absolutely right. And why is it art and not politics and vice versa? It's because those people have control of value. They dominate value. And I think it's real important for us to understand that it is an issue of dominance and disenfranchisement that we are up against. It has nothing to do with anything else. And as long as that structure exists where we are disenfranchised and white men are dominant, they can continue to not pay attention to black art. They can not pay attention to the art of any disenfranchised groups, even if we're the majority. Which we are, in fact. It was very interesting to me. I've been looking at a lot of black art, you know, black mural, the black mural movement, and I can see a lot of the same impulses operating, the desire to affirm their own heritage, the desire to make art that's relevant to the community, and that has been disqualified as art. You know, and it's, I mean, that's just across the board is an issue of dominance. It's the same, and until we are 50% in control of the world, that will not change. We will be up against it all the time. It's very important to understand what that means, you know, so that we can rail against it and say that's not fair and all that stuff. But that is one of the functions of dominance, is one can define reality and disqualify everybody else's reality. That doesn't count. And that's what they're really saying. That doesn't count. And I don't have to pay attention to it.
It's very important because there has been a tradition of dividing art from craft in the last recent history, you know, the last couple of hundred years. But this is, in fact, a historical anomaly because in the past, great works of art tended, at least during certain periods, to combine elements of art and craft together, of architecture, painting, and sculpture. It was a whole installation, which was a totality. It was a whole. There weren't separate elements which were taken off and then presented as being wholes. There was a total presentation, an installation that was complete in itself in which all the parts related to each other. And I think that that's true of the dinner party. But I think that that in itself is another criticism of the existing modernism of the art world.
Absolutely. Well, could we talk a little bit about why I did that in the dinner party? I mean, it's not an accident. I mean, for me, being a feminist artist means addressing all of these schisms, you know.
Modernism.
No, that's an ism. All these schisms between male and female, class and class, art and craft. I mean, for me, all those kind of distinctions are suspect. I come from another base. I just don't think like that. I just don't think like, I'm a fine artist and so I can't use needlework. I'm a woman so I have to be in the kitchen. I just don't think like that. And I think I come from a more holistic and integrated self. And I am committed to what Virginia Woolf talked about, the wedding of thought and feeling, which is the wedding of objective and subjective. And one can translate that into the wedding of masculine and feminine, which means breaking down all of the arbitrary distinctions and categories which have arisen first since the Renaissance and have been reinforced since the Industrial Revolution and are very basic to the dehumanization of society. So I think that the dinner party comes out of another sense of reality and a different set of assumptions that do implicitly challenge modernism unquestionably. I mean, I find that modernism and formalism particularly art without content is like sex without intimacy, technically sufficient but emotionally empty. And I think that that is where we've come in modernism and in formalism, which is not just an art. Formalism is not just an art. I mean, it's responsible for the creation of cruel buildings and inhuman spaces and discussions of literature that, and also literature that has also that is devoid of meaning. You know, I think that the whole formalist thrust that has come out, has really come since the Second World War, is very anti-human and has dehumanized artists, too. Because, you know, really, artists, the history of artists is there are a lot of artists who've always been socially engaged. And art comes out of both a desire to define the meaning of life and a kind of rage and railing against the human limitations. I mean, artists have always done that.
Yes, but your work not only criticizes society, the existing culture in that sense, I think that it is so shocking to the existing art structure that your work really is, in some sense, the most absolute criticism of modernism. The art world cannot give up modernism. And modernism, in my view, has been over for, you know, at least 20 years. And the reason why art has been changing in the 70s, the reason why women have emerged, so many women, relatively speaking, so many women, and been influential in changing the art world, I think has depended in a great measure on older women models who've been able to be successful. And I don't think we would have so many women who are at the point that they are at now in terms of attention and success if it were not for you, whether you are acknowledged as being instrumental in that or not. I think it's very crucial.
Well, I appreciate that. I must say that I have been hoping that more women artists would begin to challenge the structure of the art world and move into another relationship with society as artists. And I think that even though the content of women's art has certainly changed and more women are visible, there is still a strong tendency on the part of women artists to try and operate within the structure of the art world, and a lack of understanding of, one, how the structure of the art world in and of itself mitigates against women, is basically inhumane, and is detrimental to art having a place in society other than as a commodity. What we have to say as women in our art has nothing to do with commodities. It has to do with enriching women's lives by providing images that give them a new sense of self. And that is what we are capable of doing as women. But our audience is not the audience that goes to Soho. Our audience is everywhere. And our audience are those women who would feel intimidated by coming to Soho. There's a huge audience there, and we as women artists have not yet begun even to provide sufficient images. I feel that, you know, my work is just a stab in that direction. There need to be many women artists working to provide new images for women everywhere. And that means, you know, forgetting about Leo Castelli. That means rethinking the terms of what it means to be an artist. You know, my sense of being an artist is that I'm a representative and that I have an obligation to those I represent, not to go around and take a poll and ask them what they want to see, but to speak out of my own experience and to try and share that experience in a way that's understandable to other women. And I know if I'm doing it by their response. Now, if, in fact, I felt that there was a conflict between what I wanted to do and what the response was, I would trust my own instincts, because I think artists ultimately are responsible to themselves. But it is incredible to have audience feedback. It's incredible to get letters from women. It's wonderful to know that what I'm making has some relevance to somebody outside me and 20 people. I mean, that's my goal as an artist, and that's what's been very misunderstood, I think, about me. You know, when people think I'm a careerist, I mean, it's so weird. You know, I mean, I've paid a lot of dues to have the reward of feeling that my art is relevant. But that's the reward for me, that my art is relevant to other people's lives.
When I think about your work, and I think about how women have changed art in the 70s, and I think that most of the important art in the last 10 years has been by women, because I think the old system is pretty bankrupt. I mean, there are important people who are in the system who are doing good work, but by and large, most of the important work, as far as I can tell, has been done by women, and I see a lot of art. But one of the things that has continued to bother me a great deal has been the response of other women writers and critics and historians. And the chief example that I would give of that would be Linda Nochlin's article, Why Are There No Great Women Artists? And I know that you have talked about the importance of how many important women there are in history and the fact that this has been denied to us and has been central to our continued suffering. I think the reason why Nochlin's article was such a hit was that its title basically fed into a misogynist point of view about women in history. And Germaine Greer's book, The Obstacle Race, also does this. And I really must object to women writers and women critics who have taken the limited information that we know and said that this is all we know or all we will know or all there is, and continued to portray women as marginal and fringe figures when in fact they weren't. Rachel Reutsch is one of the chief examples of someone who was enormously successful during her lifetime. But this is something that is a very much an issue, I think, in the art community, and that has been the response of women writers. I don't agree with Linda Nochlin. I think she's wrong, and I don't agree with Greer either. I think that great women are there in history in numbers, but we don't know about them yet. They're still hidden to us.
Well, you see, one of the problems with that argument is that greatness has been defined, as Nochlin pointed out, in such a way that it's like we lose, you win. If we play the game of arguing woman artist to man artist, male artist, female artist to male artist, this one's as good as that one, we don't get anywhere. Because given the restrictions on women and art training for women, women couldn't be, in those terms that have been defined as greatness, could not compete. They could get to a certain level and they couldn't go any farther. Now, that's a reality by all my reading in history. If one accepts the terms of greatness as they have been established.
I don't.
Well, that's a whole other story. If we want to start from another base and look at human achievement in another way, then we get a different story. For example, then we get a woman artist whose circumstances were enormously difficult, Artemisia Gentileschi, who transcended her circumstances, made extraordinary paintings, and can be a heroine for us, both as a painter and as a role model. If we use that criteria, for example, on Jackson Pollock and Georgia O'Keeffe. Okay, let's use the criteria. Let me skip a little here to Jackson Pollock and George O'Keeffe. Okay, if we define greatness in terms of the male hero, the single male hero, working by himself, struggling, achieving at all costs, being a drunk, you know, abusing his family, being—I don't mean to go on and on about Pollock, but there's certainly many examples in art history. Being desperate, driven to suicide. Making work that is full of masculine energy, but not integrated. And then we look at O'Keeffe, and we look at the kind of integration of feeling and thought, intellect and emotion, and we judge Jackson Pollock's work by a different set of standards. Or we judge Frank Stella's work by a set of standards that says art should be full of life, full of feeling, revealing, human, emotive. Then Frank Stella doesn't look so good. In other words, what I'm trying to say to you is it has to do with criteria and how and context. And if we accept the structure of achievement as it has been passed down to us, without reevaluating it. That doesn't mean throwing in the baby out with the bathwater, but without reevaluating it or without redefining it, then we do end up with the conclusion that women artists have simply not been able to achieve, that historic circumstances have not allowed women artists to achieve. And all the examples in the world do not change the fact that by the criteria that have been established and the categories and the set of standards, we come out short. But that's the whole point. And we have to redefine that set of standards so that we have a chance to participate. And this is, if we look at the history of the human of human civilization, we don't think it's so great that somebody has to live all by themselves and operate as an individual and deprive themselves of family life or cut off or have somebody wait on them in order to be able to paint. They have to have a wife who has to obliterate her identity so that they can paint. And in fact, we, if we come over and look at you like you've been looking at us, and we read down the history of art, and we maybe we don't think what you've done is so hot. So I mean, that's the issue, is the standards themselves. And it doesn't do to get into that context and try and fight, you know, my gal's as good as your guy. It all has to be looked at again. The assumptions have to be looked at again about what achievement is and what's greatness, and why is a painting that hangs on a wall that has no human content greater than a personal work that speaks to us another level of reality? Why is that so? Why is a quilt not as valuable as a record of human achievement as a sculpture? I mean, why is that?
It goes back to the central question of criteria, and the problem with the situation in terms of people who are defining criteria is that there has been very little change in the way that those people think about criteria. And I see it in the art world all the time.
Why should they change? They run the show.
Yes, but the problem, Judy, is that there are not enough people who are interested in the problem of criteria. I'm interested in it myself, and I know maybe six people who are interested in it, but there won't be a real change in the way culture is defined until more people become concerned about the problem of criteria.
We've been brainwashed into thinking that all these things are absolutes, not that they're agreed upon human consensus that don't work anymore, and so all we have to do is rethink them. But, you know, we're brought up with this idea that there's all this authority, and it's right, what's right and what's wrong and what's good and what's bad. And, you know, it's hard to come to a place where you think, hey, you know, that's not consistent with my experience, and I think maybe we should rethink this. That's not the spirit in which we as human beings operate generally. And I think that there are a lot of people who are interested in the issue and who are struggling to come out from behind the brainwashing and to try and really look and see if all of these value statements are or are not consistent with their needs and feelings as human beings.
But you see, I think that when you make images that are that culturally powerful, that you are changing culture, and that is part of what you are doing, and that's why the existing culture is so afraid of you and what you do, and why there have been so many attempts to not only bury you alive, but to obliterate mentions of you. Now, this gets back to something that I have not heard addressed in the discussion of your work, but I want to address it, and that's the territory of aesthetics. I want to make the claim for your work, which I think has become lost and confused, that I think your work is extremely important based on its aesthetic qualities, its art qualities, its quality as an object. Because I think that what people have missed in your work is its quality as art. And they have gotten around to the other issues in your work. And there has been that drive to say that's politics, it's feminism. People have not been willing to deal. I have never seen any discussion of your work in qualitative terms as an art object. And from my standards, your work rates very high as an art object in purely aesthetic terms.
Well, I think Lucy Lepard's article in Art in America addressed...
Partially
addressed the iconography and the quality of my work. And I appreciate your saying that, because it's certainly one of the more frustrating issues in my life. You know, I mean, I get so tired of people writing about my personality. I mean, I don't go into my studio, you know, and think about politics. I am basically an image maker. And I must say that the director of the Boston ICA, Stephen Prokopoff, commented on that. He said that, you know, he has watched the development of my work, and he knows that basically I'm an image maker, and I believe in the power of images, and I try and make images that are beautiful and transformed and complex And ultimately, for me, my work has to be judged on that. And I often say, you know, when all the political and social implications, which I consider stuff that's around it, it doesn't have anything to do with me. I think it just happens to be the fact that I'm making these images at this moment in time. And so they are new and unfamiliar, so people are getting excited. And that once we are used to women artists making images out of their own beings, that then my work will be able to be seen as what it is, which is, for me, you know, images that I believe are beautiful.
Unless a way is found to make an argument for your work on purely aesthetic grounds, there will be that continuing tendency to go back again and again to your personality, and this always happens to women artists.
That happens in history.
Women's work is not evaluated on its work. It's based on women's personality. And one of the things that I've tried to do in my own work is to obliterate as much as possible in discussions of my work and of other women's work issues of personality. I have dealt strictly with the works and their value in terms of my sense of value judgments. And I think it's very important to get away from personality, you know? We don't see Frank Stella's personality talked about the same way we see Eva Hesse's personality talked about. And this is entirely disreputable.
That women do it. I mean, I have to tell you that I have gotten so much stuff from women as well about, you know, my personality, including a woman who wanted to have at the AAUW a discussion of my personality. Because when I came to her school, their school, they had difficulty with me because my being there and my talking out of the level I talk out of and where I'm at forced them to confront where they were at. And rather than deal with that, they dumped on me and made an issue of my personality. I was not nice. I was not nice. That is very deep in the women's movement, too. And it's a very terrible thing women do to other women. It's not my personality that's an issue. I can have a lousy personality. It's my work that counts.
And I have tried very much not to talk about issues of personality. Whenever I bring this subject, which is of considerable concern to me, up to other women in the art world, they say, "You're so macho, you're so elitist. I want to get away from that. That's one of the things that's crippled us." And then people feel that I'm authoritarian. The reason that I'm hard on other women is because, you know, I want us to get into history.
That I think that ultimately, I'm going to die and my work is going to be there, and that's what counts.
What do you think is going to happen to your work?
I don't know. I don't think that's at all clear yet. I'm sure that it depends entirely upon how far we go in building a network to care for and preserve the achievements of our own sex. I think that that's really important. I mean, that's what civilization is for, and I think that, you know, men have built a good structure for themselves, and we need to build that for ourselves. We need to protect our own heritage, and the degree to which that happens is the degree to which my work will survive. I think that there's a lot of women's work that is of great value that has not survived because there has not been a network to preserve it and protect it and house it.
That's another issue for women professionals today, which again is another issue that's not being addressed very much.
Well, that's a very difficult issue because at a certain point power is very frightening. And to really begin to reconstruct civilization means to really act in a powerful way. And power is the thing that women have been taught is a real taboo. That, of course, is what all the stuff is about my personality. That's what's terrifying in my personality to people, men and women. And power is not allowable to us, but without it, we're impotent. And that is, I think, one of the real dilemmas for us as women in this moment in history, you know, and it's certainly a dilemma that I have faced in my studio and struggled with in my studio, because to be all that I can be means to acknowledge and feel okay about my power, and then to confront everybody else's feelings that it's not okay. But it is okay, and as one woman after another steps out and acts on her own power, not power over people, not power to destroy, as we witness in the world, but the power to do. Absolutely.
You know, it's very curious to me how in the early days that Woman House developed in California, and that it took women artists almost between 10 and 15 years to get the same kind of situation set up here in New York. And it seems to me very strange that California was so much ahead in this respect.
It's an issue. It's much more difficult when you're around a situation where there are huge rewards. It's much harder to not pay attention to the rewards and to not get involved in wanting them. You know, in California, the rewards aren't as high. I mean,
very few.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's less to lose. It's much more difficult as you get closer to the Big Apple and the big game, I mean, and the big marbles, you know? I mean, one has to be very sympathetic to that. It's a much harder situation. I mean, I didn't work in New York. I would have been scared to death to work in New York.
What about the criticism that has continued to be of so much controversy? You see, I have a theory. When things are controversial for a very long time, it means that they are terribly important, and I think that that's one of the issues that surrounds your work. Several years ago, Lucy Lepard wrote an article in which she talked about women trying to create female imagery and whether there was, in fact, a female imagery and what this means for women in art.
I think there's been a lot of misinterpretation about my views on this subject. I don't think I would ever assert that I believe that biologically there are great profound differences between women and men, and if there are, we don't know what they are. That's total conjecture, and it could not be proven except in a non-sexist society. All the other differences, I believe, are cultural. But I believe that there are profound cultural differences between us, and that our experiences in the world are class experiences, not our person's experience. And that's very important, because we can have personal experiences, women and men, that are very similar. But our experiences as members of classes, two different classes, and there is a class structure on the planet, our experiences as members of two different classes separate us. And so out of that difference would naturally come a difference of expression if we were being true to our experiences. And that difference can take all kinds of forms. It can take the forms of different content. It can take the forms of different techniques, so that, of course, a woman, a 19th century woman who does not have access to the world, stays home and sews. So she makes quilts. She doesn't go out and make bronze sculptures. That's a difference. It can take the difference in terms of content. A woman who deals with her own experiences as a woman, her content would be different. Her experiences would be different. She could deal with her fear of rape. I mean, those are not issues that are relevant to men's experience, except from another point of view. Her forms, now the forms themselves, I think that that's an interesting issue. I think that there's no question that there have been, well, for example, if you look at Erikson's experiments, you know, I think his conclusions were crazy. But his experiments that boys have a tendency to construct one way, sort of externally. Women have a tendency to construct internally in a circle. Well, now that may be or may not be a biological disposition, but it is already an early disposition that manifests itself at an early age. It doesn't mean women are interested in houses and men are interested in skyscrapers. That's crazy. But it might mean that women have a different way of organizing form based on either a biological or a cultural orientation. We don't know that. So when you see those differences, there's nothing wrong with them. That's fine. I mean, I think it's fine to pursue the whole wealth of differences between human beings, because that only enriches our human vocabulary.
Well, I think it's, again, the fear of different forms.
You know, absolutely. There's only one right way to do everything, right? Well, I mean, I think what is very much of a tyranny to all of us. And opening up all those issues and allowing people to be multiple and allowing them to be different and allowing them to express from their own experiences, allowing the black experience to become part of our life understanding, allowing the experience of poor people and old people and women. I mean, opening up all those frontiers and allowing the pluralistic expression of the human spirit seems to me to be what I'm working for as an artist, by trying to share my own content and introduce that into the cultural stream, and by implication encourage other people to do the same thing.
How have you dealt, particularly not so much recently, but when you were really struggling?
I'm still really struggling.
No, but you have reached a certain point, Judy. I mean, I think that that's clear. How have you dealt with the tremendous amount of incredible abuse and hatred that has been directed at you as a human being? How can you live with that?
It's been very difficult for me, extremely difficult for me. I'm going to answer it. But I think it's important to know that it damn near killed me. I have never been suicidal, except after all the stuff happened around the dinner party. I have got to say I took the worst battering in my life around the dinner party, and after having had a gigantic success in San Francisco. You know, there's all these stories about how the dinner party wasn't shown because it was so expensive. It was no more expensive than any major show, and the first museum that showed it made a considerable amount of money off of it, so that was simply not a real, you know, and it was hugely successful, wildly reviewed, 100,000 people, as you know. And then when everything fell apart and I began to get it, you know, accusations, and I mean, just as you said, an outpouring of hatred just and abuse, and the piece went into storage, and it looked like it was never going to be shown. It looked like I really came closest to feeling I had been defeated. I had done everything I knew how to do, and I felt that I was going to be defeated, that I was defeated. But I did what I always do, which is I went back to work. But I woke up every morning thinking, what's the point? And it took me 2 hours. I would go out. I moved to a small town where I would be relatively obscure and protected. And the people who work with me really took over the burdens of answering the letters and fronting for me and giving me space, because they knew I was really shaky. I was really shaky. I would get up every morning, and I would go out to the park, and I would run, and I would run, and I would run, and I would run until I... Because running is a way of counteracting depression. And then I'd come back, and I'd work all day. I threw myself into the needlework book, in which the new book called Embroidering Our Heritage, in which I fortunately had the support of Doubleday to do something quite adventurous artistically, which was to try and make an illuminated manuscript using mass-produced technology. So it's an artist's book on a mass level. And it was a very challenging problem, extremely challenging problem, which allowed me to become absorbed in my work. But there was another and very important issue, which was that I have a very broad support network of friends. And my friends call me from everywhere. I mean, they would call me up sometimes, and it was just like, hold on, hold on, hold on. It was like they wouldn't let me go. And I just held on. I just held on through it. And I was like a wounded animal when I went there to that town. And I worked and I tried to keep myself together. And what happened, of course, was people began to wonder around the country what had happened to the piece. And, of course, I got a lot of phone calls from newspaper interviewers, and they wanted me to explain to them what had happened. And I couldn't explain it. I was so devastated by it, I couldn't explain it. All I could say was, well, why don't you try and find out what happened? And slowly people began to find out what happened, and they began to get angry. And there then, as you know, began to be organization around the country to get the piece back out of storage and to bring it back into view, because there was a gigantic audience for it. But it was, without question, the hardest period I've ever been through in my life. But I worked. And that, for me, is ultimately what it's about, is just keep working, no matter what. And I realized that, you know, ultimately, if my capacity to work was ended, then that was the end of the story. And that I had to trust that as long as I could keep on working, I wasn't dead yet. And something happened out of it. I mean, I just, after about a year and a half, I started feeling better. Of course, the piece started coming out, and I knew that it would never have come out without that grassroots support. But at some level, I had learned a lesson. I mean, I had really learned a lesson. I had set out to test whether or not the system as it exists will or will not operate for women at the same level that it will operate for men. And I heard the answer.
It's very important for women to understand what's going to happen to them when they really challenge culture and thwart cultural expectation as artists.
But you don't even have to think. See, the thing is that I never set out to challenge culture. I just set out to speak in my own voice. I just speak in my own voice, and I go one step in front of another, and I try and tell the truth in my work. I try and be true to the body, as Virginia Woolf said. And then all this other stuff happens. All these people start saying all these things. And that's not how I work at all. I just try and say what I have to say. I have a lot to say. This is another level of struggle now, which has to do with people falling all over me. You know, and that's another kind of confusion. When everybody wants to, you know, like make me into an object in a way, you know, and like a pillar of success, and I've done it. I mean, I haven't done it yet. I'm only halfway through my career. I have another 20 good years, you know, of pumping out there. And so now I have to be careful of being consumed in another way. I mean, there's just, it doesn't change. I mean, it changes. The nature of the struggle changes. But it continues to be a struggle.
But this is a new level, because in the past, women have always been stopped exactly at this point where they were defeated at the most crucial point.
That's true.
What stopped women.
If I go forward now, it's because of a network of support that's being built that will allow me to go forward. My destiny as an artist is totally tied up with my destiny as a member of the female sex. And as we as women move forward, I move forward. And that is something that I think is very, very hard to accept, because it's like I could not do it all the way either. But I've come a long way. I know I've come a long way. And that means that other women can come that far and farther.
But I think it's very important that you're one of the most historically advanced models in the present. There's no question about that. You have gone further. You have challenge culture, and you have, although you have met many defeats and terrible suffering,
I'm still here.
You're still fighting. You have done more than that. You have really pushed culture. You have really criticized culture, and you have gone further. And this is a new point for women artists. There's no question about it, even in historical terms. It's not a question of popularity or of money. Although I do want to bring up the subject of money, because it's something that has always bothered me in the discussion of your work. I want to point out that you are the only artist that I know that has to raise money privately for installations of their work, because I know that nobody in the 420 building who's a millionaire ever pays a nickel out of their pocket. Their dealer guarantees them museum shows. Your work is unique in the sense that you've had to pay every penny of the way with your supporters, and this is absolutely unique. No one else has been forced to do this. It's the issue that a woman wants to be paid money for what she does. They expect you to be sacrificed on the altar of art.
Wait, I think it's very important to understand that I don't get paid for what I do. I don't make any money for when the piece gets shown. I don't make any money off the sales of the posters, the postcards, none of the photographs, nothing. All of it goes back to Through the Flower, which is in debt. Diane Gellin and I are still personally in debt. We're still trying to pay off the debt from finishing the piece. And I don't make any money from the showing of the piece.
I'm not trying to say that you do, but I am pointing out that the fact that that you got to the $250,000 point is something new historically for women.
Between 85 and 100 of it was mine. It was everything I made over 6 years. So it's really, we only raised about $150,000, which is a lot. A lot of it came from grassroots support, from people sending in $5, $10, $15.
How much are you in debt now?
We're just, after a year and a half, about finished with the 20, we have about between $5,000 and $8,000 more to pay off of the $20,000 for the finishing of the piece.
Well, there's no other artist who's received as much attention in the media as you have, who's Ted broke. You know, I mean, Rauschenberg's worth $3 million, Judy. again, it points up the bizarre, and I can't think of any other word to describe it, the bizarre relationship between women and money in the art world, between the kinds of sacrifices that women make and the kind of rewards that other people get.
Well, I personally don't care very much about having money except to have enough money to keep working. That is all I care about, basically.
Well, I think it's important that you be rewarded because it sets a model for other women.
I think that's true. Like, I had this dinner one night with Faith Wilding and Suzanne Lacy, both of whom are feminist artists from the West Coast, and both of whom are really operating, I think, out of very similar principles and goals and values as I have. And Faith was just in tears. She was talking about how, you know, we don't have what to reward our own achievers within our own structure yet in the terms that have been traditionally associated with reward. And so what's been happening is that, I mean, for example, they reward me by just giving to me at a level that is so profound. I mean, they're trying to develop another reward system, you know, of support and love and caring. And it's very important. If we don't have money to give, I think it is important for us to stop beating each other and to try and give each other support and love in the absence of the traditional supports so that we help women go on.
But I want women to be rewarded, Judy.
That is a reward.